When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Touchdown, Giants!
You're listening to the Best of the Giants.
And the Giants have won!
A weekly mix of WFAN Sports Radio 101.9's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
And Gio coming to you live from the Bill Ford Tough Studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. The Sims Spotlight is brought to you by Balance of Nature Whole Food Supplements. Visit balanceofnature.com. Every Wednesday, 8 a.m., Phil joins us. Two-time Super Bowl champion, Giants legend, and all-around great guy, Phil Sims. Good morning, Phil. How are you?
Oh, heck, I'm just pretty average today, Gio. Haven't had a chance to listen to the show. What the hell you guys been talking about?
Well, you know what? One of the things we've been talking about is how you're really branching out. Obviously, we know that you're doing the Balance of Nature commercials, but you've also done a PSA for responsible driving and designated driving. So we want to play for the listeners who have might have missed it, your new PSA about making sure that you make the right decisions if you're buzzed.
Uh-oh.
No.
Phil.
It's
buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
Taking Balance of Nature makes me feel happy.
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Once I did it with four women.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're hot, Boomer.
Nice job, Phil. And,
okay.
Once you did that, you know, Boomer was a little jealous, so he had to do one himself. So let's listen to his.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Boomer.
It's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Shut the f*** up! You f***head devil fan!
And now a speech.
I love you, Al Dukes, but you are a f***ing psycho.
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
You look like s***.
Hello. Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're a p-
Yes. Man, you know what? You guys got too much time on your hands here. You got me thinking. I'm going, when did I do a PSA for drunk driving? No, I don't think I have. I don't know. I do a lot of them for Hackensack Hospital. I usually do something once a month.
Yeah.
So I said, I don't think I've ever done one on drinking, but oh boy.
Well, we made sure we put it out there. And by the way, you were there for when all those clips that Boomer was, you heard from Boomer, there was Boomer and Gio Live 1 that you were attending, where Boomer tied one on with the Casamigos.
Yes.
You got to witness that in person that night.
Oh yeah, that was quite a night. As he calls me, I can tell he's tore up already. And he goes, you know, now make sure you have a couple drinks before you get in the car to come down here. What do you mean? You want me to drink before I drive here? But as soon as I walked in, I just said, yep, Boomer's tore up.
Yeah, but you know, I kind of warned you beforehand.
Yes, I know you did. You did.
You know what you were getting yourself into.
Oh no, it was good. You wanted me to join you, and I just didn't want to. So, but that's okay. It was a fun night. That was a good night. I know you guys have done a few of those since then, and I haven't been invited, but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, we figured not to bother you with it. You know, it's one of those things. I mean, obviously, we'd love to have you at every single one. If you want to commit to next year's right now on Long Island, I think we might as well go ahead and do it, right?
Well, it's a little far in advance for me, so let's go.
Okay.
I'm trying to get through today.
Let's get to some football. So it is announced that Michael Penix Jr. is going to take over for Kirk Cousins. I mean, it's a big move in Atlanta. I mean, we don't feel it up here just simply because we're not down there living what's going on with the Atlanta Falcons and everything. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know how you look at this, the Giants are the ones who are going to play Michael Penix in his first start as a rookie quarterback this week down in Atlanta. You know, first, what do you think happens to Kirk Cousins? And number two, what do you think Michael Penix is capable of doing here?
Well, listen, I've watched quite a few Atlanta games this year, and I watched this last one, and I said to people that I've talked to, I just go, oh my gosh, what? There I am, oh my gosh. Yeah. What has happened to his arm and just everything? The ball has no pop on it. You know, it's just not, he's not throwing the ball near like he used to, which we've seen in the past years when he's up in Minnesota. So, and I think this too, I thought, well, they'll keep playing him until they're out of the playoffs. But what difference would it make if they make the playoffs? If they somehow get in down there in the NFC South and win it, they're not going anywhere. So you might as well give Michael Penix a few games this year. And what do I expect? Boomer, you know what I expect. I expect to see, you know, a lot of throws down the field. You know, I would hope he moves around a little more in the pros than he did in college. But the arm is special. And so now I'll be tuned into him this Sunday and really can't wait to watch him, see how it looks.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the amazing things, people probably may not know this, but it was like 2 years ago, I was watching a game where he was playing with Rome Odunze out there at Washington. And I came in that next morning, if you remember, Phil.
And I said,
Phil, who the hell is this Michael Penix kid? And you had you had all the details and everything about who he was and how he was, I guess, the highest recruited football player in Indiana history. Isn't that right?
I think that's right. Yes, and he put up, I think, 500 yards and 5 touchdowns against Ohio State. He did it against a lot of these big teams, Penn State and Indiana. I think at one time, his freshman year, they were ranked number 5 or 6 in the country. So that tells you what he was doing. And I remember watching him, and I told you this. I liked the quarterback that was there. And I said, oh, my gosh, what did they do? They recruited somebody. They're going to ruin the other guy. And then he got in after about 3 throws and said, oh, okay, I understand why.
Yeah, the guy, he's about as accurate as there is. He throws a great deep ball. I was likening him, because he is left-handed, of course, to Tua Tagovailoa, who throws a very catchable ball, very anticipatory when he's throwing the football. And I kind of feel like he's very, very similar in that regard. He doesn't move around, which is I'm fine with. I mean, he tends to want to stay in the pocket. He doesn't like to run. And I guess one of the knocks against him will be, and we'll see, is whether or not he can stay healthy.
Stay healthy, and like I said, I think he would move around more than he did in college. You know, he was capable of just standing there and letting the rush get close to him and make great throws down the field. The difference between him and Tua, he's taller, he's bigger, and his arm is, he's Nolan Ryan, and Tua is Tommy John. So, I don't know if those are good.
Yeah, okay, no, that's good. That's a good comparison. The other thing, too, is we're careening towards the NFL draft, and the New York Giants are right there with the Raiders right now because of strength of schedule. The Giants have the number one overall pick. The Raiders still have to play the Jaguars. I don't see the Giants winning any of these games left on their schedule. I'm not so sure that they're not playing guys out there that would not normally be playing. And maybe they're trying to lose these games. I'm not sure. But saying all of that, 2-15, if that does happen, 100th season, planes flying overhead, all this other stuff going on. I mean, do you see these guys staying in their jobs currently?
Well, you know, I hate answering this question, but I really thought about it, and I thought 2 weeks ago, I said, look, I think Joe Shane and Brian Daboll would be back. I do. I think they It would really help if they win a game or two here in the last three.
It may hurt them.
To quiet people, yeah. But it keeps they could keep their jobs, and that's what I'm talking about. So, yeah, and too, the big thing is, too, the Giants, and I think in the next couple of years, you're the capologist, you know this, and you look it up all the time and say this about money, but I think the Giants are going to have a lot of money to spend in the next couple of years, so they have a chance to really affect the football team through the draft. Of course, good draft picks, and with the money they're going to have, and I would think there's going to be a few players that are not going to be here that make good money, too, which is going to help this team rebuild, I think, faster and quicker than maybe we expect. So we'll see what happens.
Boomer and Geo with Phil Simms on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. A couple weeks ago when I asked you about, maybe it was like about 3 weeks ago, might have been a month ago, I asked you about the MVP, and at that point you said Saquon Barkley. Right now it looks like a two-horse race between Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. If you had a vote, who would it be between those two guys right now?
Oh, that's a really good one. It's really close. I probably would give it to Josh Allen because I think the team, he's just more, it's hard to even say this, that he's more important to the team than Lamar Jackson is. But Lamar Jackson's numbers are, you just can't ignore them. And I know they've lost, what, five games. That's a lot for a team sometimes to win MVPs when you lose that many games. But Lamar Jackson is running, his throwing is ridiculous. He's as accurate as can be. He throws a perfect spiral, it seems like, every throw. Powerful arm when he needs it. It would be close, but I right now would probably get the Josh Allen. But I will say this. I think when it's all said and done, Lamar Jackson is going to win it. So I'm not going both ways saying that, but I think Lamar is going to finish the season really strong. Buffalo, just, I felt this, Boomer, you've heard me say it, and Gio, maybe I've said it to both of you, but all year long I've thought this about Buffalo. I just don't see enough strength in the football team to carry this through to be a real challenger to go to the Super Bowl and win it. And we're seeing this the last couple of weeks. The defense, small, gets run over a little bit, and it's tough to win big games when you have a defense that lets teams run on you like Buffalo has done.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this on the kickoff show that we do on Fridays about what we expected in that Buffalo-Lions game. We both expected a really high-scoring game. I think we both picked the Lions to win the game. But when you have as many injuries as the Lions have right now, given their three games left on their schedule, do you think that they can hold on to the number one seed in the NFC, or do you think Minnesota can jump them? Or the Eagles, for that matter.
Yeah, the Eagles would be the one I would worry about, and I think the Eagles are the best team in the NFC, and of course, with all the injuries that they have in Detroit, it's clear-cut to me right now. The Eagles, when you watch them this past week, the way they played against Pittsburgh, man, they had it rolling, and just, oh, what a shock. Right all this, the game starts, and who gets the football?
A.J. Brown. Yep.
And A.J. Brown looked like he, it's amazing watching. The week before, he was open on down the field, and some of the throws that Jalen Hurts didn't make when he was wide open. And this week, they went right to him, and it looked like his energy was better. He ran faster, and early in the game, he was a great point for Philadelphia to get off the good start. And Philadelphia really overall dominated Pittsburgh Steelers.
Do you think that we're going to see a Kansas City Chiefs team when the playoff starts that flips a switch, for lack of a better term, and we have to, Patrick Mahomes is going to have to be healthy. But, you know, we're talking about teams like the Buffalo Bills and the Detroit Lions and Philadelphia Eagles, and the Kansas City Chiefs keep chugging along. They just haven't been impressive. Do you believe that they still should be a favorite to win the Super Bowl from what you've seen from them this year?
No. I would, if I had to pick a favorite, it would be the Philadelphia Eagles to win the Super Bowl. And just the team, it's hard to find a weakness in their team. And when I watch the Kansas City Chiefs, it looks like the team from last year, but hasn't made that transition into what they really have to do to win. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes has no faith in the offensive line. The receiving core does not get open on a consistent basis. He's escaping the pocket a lot of times way before he has to because he doesn't trust it. People are open. He doesn't see them. And it's about as bad as I've seen them play. And they still win. I know their record, of course, but it reminds me of last year. But last year, with about three or four games to go in the regular season, they kind of figured it out. I haven't seen them do that so far this year. And this past week, I know Cleveland's defense is good, But overall, Kansas City's offense, I thought, was really, really subpar by just about everybody on the offensive side.
You know, now he has a high ankle sprain. I don't know if he's going to play on Saturday versus Houston, and then they turn right around and they play Wednesday, Christmas Day, in Pittsburgh. So it's a really short week for them. I mean, your sense, do you think he plays this week against Houston or no?
Well, let's see. Who do they play next Wednesday? That's
Pittsburgh. Houston. So they go to Pittsburgh. So basically they have two top five defenses or top 10 defenses that they're going to play against. And they have a two-game lead for the number one seed in the AFC. So if they wanted to, and they have Carson Wentz on their team, so it's not like some also-ran quarterback. I mean, they do have a legit backup quarterback that could probably go out there and play reasonably well. So what do you think?
Well, I think it's his right ankle, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? Do you know that?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so the right ankle, and you know your left ankle, my right ankle is the worst ankle you can hurt as a quarterback. I hurt my right ankle in 1989, and I'm telling you, it was awful. Had a high ankle sprain, throwing. Oh, my God, my arm hurt. I never had a sore arm until I got a high ankle sprain because you can't push off, you can't plant with it, all those things. And I know a lot has changed in the medical world. You know, when Mahomes got, when he got nicked up last year, it was amazing his recovery and everything and how it came about. So I don't know, but I would think he would miss. If he's going to miss a game, I would say it'd be this Saturday. If he plays this Saturday, then you know they're going to try to keep that number one seed. That's a big deal for him, that's for sure. But it'll be interesting. Can't wait to see it this weekend. But my guess is he will miss one of those games, though, Boomer.
I want to talk about the Jets just for a second, not so much from what's happening on the field, but who they're going to hire. We're hearing a couple of GM names that have been interviewed, but the most intriguing head coaching name to me, even though I would bring in John Gruden, I'd love to see him here, has been Mike Vrabel. Now, right. Vrabel's a guy who is, we know his personality, and Woody Johnson would have to be hands-off if Vrabel comes into the building. But do you see Mike Vrabel and the Jets and Woody Johnson being a fit?
I do. Mike Vrabel is, when he walks in the room, he owns it right away. And, you know, I got a chance to cover him a few times down in Tennessee. And I just remember one thing. He thought, he took the head job. He goes, I thought it was all about X's and O's. I can remember this. And he goes, but it's not. It's about connecting to the players and getting the best out of them and having the relationship that makes them better players and better for our building, all this. I thought that was pretty cool. But he would be perfect for the Jets. The Jets, I think it's a good job. You know, a lot of key pieces are there. They got some players on both sides of the ball that you can build with. And Mike Vrabel would be a perfect guy to take over that team and play a certain way with his offense. It won't be high-flying, wide-open, at least not the first year or two. But he knows how to do that. And, of course, he would help the defense and definitely get the team to play up to the capabilities a lot better than we've seen this year
talent. Here's a $50 million question. If it is Mike Vrabel, does Aaron Rodgers come back next year?
I would say no. If you're going to bring in the new coach, I think, and we've talked about this, I do think that the Jets will move on from Aaron Rodgers. That's just my opinion. I don't know if it's right. I did watch the documentary he had out last night, 3 episodes. That was very interesting. But I had to keep watching it because he was talking about everything that's going on through his football career, which is pretty interesting. But I would say no, Aaron Rodgers will not be with the Jets next year.
Yeah, I have to watch that today because we had a man's dinner, Phil, last night.
So yeah, a bunch of men went out for dinner.
A bunch of men eating steaks and farting and making jokes and inappropriate conversations. So we didn't get a chance.
That was unusual. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Right.
Okay. Yeah. I'm excited to watch. You actually like that, huh? I'm surprised because Aaron's such a wacko. That you sat there and you watched those three things and you enjoyed the documentary.
Yeah, I liked it. It was, a little slow at times and, ayahuasca and all this stuff and the things he says. And, he is a deep thinker and he is a smart dude. There's no doubt about it. And to watch his career from high school through college and the pros, just how he continuously got better physically was really kind of, pretty cool too. But, it was, like I said, it was interesting. It didn't make me want to go out and try any of these things, but
I was going to say, you ever do any psychedelics?
Nope, I haven't. Can't see it in my future. I got enough problems. I don't need to create more of them.
So it's interesting. You don't think he'll be back with the Jets next year. Do you think that he actually is playing next year somewhere?
Oh, there would always be a chance of that, just as somebody thinks they have the team that's ready. But when I think about it, I can't think of that team. You know, I know you guys talk about Sam Darnold a lot. He's up in Minnesota. And I heard somebody on TV yesterday, I'll spill a little bit what he said, that if they don't keep Sam Darnold, where do you trade him? Boy, the Indianapolis Colts, how great of a spot would that be to him to go there with the team? I think is pretty good.
But they wouldn't they wouldn't have to trade him, right? I mean, he'd be a free agent.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. He'll be a free agent. I think he would be, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the other team you got to look at, Brian Callahan down in Tennessee.
Yeah.
There's enough pieces there, and you're going to run the offense that Joe Burrow runs, which would fit Sam Darnold perfectly. So that just kind of came up yesterday, and I think I saw it when Colin Cowherd first brought it up, and I said, wow. Finally, he said something I agree with.
Very good, Phil. Well, it's great talking to you. We appreciate it. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy all the football this weekend.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, we're not going to talk to you next week. It's Christmas. I forgot.
Christmas, right. Exactly. But,
Merry Christmas, Phil.
Yeah.
Huh? All right, see.
There he goes. Merry Christmas. There he goes.
He's gone.
Happy, happy, nice, nice.
Yeah, he's more Grinch than Santa.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, but today I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah. What do you mean he was all right? He was up. I thought he was up and he was into it.
Yeah, but he was like, I've been watching today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
If you've ever wondered about the dark psychology behind history's most notorious murderers, Mind of a Serial Killer is the podcast for you. Find Mind of a Serial Killer on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have now decided the two things that realistically could happen that I want to see for both the Jets and the Giants are this. Now, I still want John Gruden over anybody, but I don't think realistically it's going to happen because no one has the guts to hire him. But the thing that I think can realistically happen for the Jets, and it gets more and more real every day, and even our buddy Phil Woot Woot said that he thinks it's a good idea. So if he's co-signing it, that means that it's something serious. Mike Vrabel to the Jets is the one thing that I want to happen, I'll be rooting for. And the other is no longer Cam Ward and his offensive coordinator. I am now rooting for Shedeur Sanders to be a New York Giant, because after what I heard on that Pac-Man Jones podcast that Jerry will play for everybody coming up in a little bit, the Giants would take him, he would come here, Dion would co-sign it, and here we go. You want to spark a franchise that's been dead for a while? That's how you do it. Shedeur Sanders to the Giants. I think it could happen. I think it could work. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, you know, good morning, G. I'm a little sad this morning. I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, all right.
But I will agree with you that, yes, it you know, sound like the Giants have spent a lot of time out there talking to Deion, talking to and watching Colorado, and whether it be Shador or whether it be Travis Hunter, I mean, they are locked in there. So it would be interesting. It's all going to come down to what happens with the Raiders.
Because if the Raiders end up with the number one pick, they are definitely
taking them. Yeah, I mean, the Giants have to get the number one overall pick. I just thought, though, that there was a chance that even if the Giants did get the number one overall pick, that Shador and Deion would say, no, we'd prefer Vegas, and let's figure this thing out where you can get Cam Ward and we go to Vegas and everybody's happy. But after hearing Deion, I mean, I really think... You know, Deion is all about the showmanship. We see him in a million commercials. We know what his playing career is like. But I really think, and I've been surprised with the way that he has handled this situation, because so far, I mean, he's doing everything I think that NFL owners and general managers want to hear. Like, we were hearing more crap out of the Caleb Williams camp this time last year than we've heard anything about Deion and Shador about making things happen. Now, I know he did say one thing about, you know, He'll play where we want him to play or something like that. I mean, maybe there's a few organizations that ended up at the top of that list, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, or maybe he didn't want Shador to go. But, I mean, you could end up in a hell of a lot more places. I know they've been worse places than the Giants, and I know they've been down for a while, but it's still the Giants. And, I mean, you know, you've had Dallas where Deion played, you know, San Francisco, NFC teams that he understands, that even Atlanta. So he knows the Giants, he knows the NFC, he knows that they're a good organization, he knows across history, not recently, and he probably knows John Mara a little bit. So the fact that he said what he said, I mean, if they get the number one pick, it's Shador Sanders, it's happening.
Yeah, I would say that Deion wants his son being drafted number one overall. That's what he wants. And he's not. It doesn't seem like he's going to mess around with either team or any team for that matter. Maybe if it was another team or so that Deion felt like wouldn't be great. Man, what is going on in here?
You're sneezing.
I don't know. Is there like, is this because of the plants?
No, I mean, you've been sick for 2 weeks.
Have you forgotten? I'm not sick. I'm telling you, I'm not sick.
It has nothing to do with the way you sound?
No,
no. The sneezing?
I feel like I sound a lot better.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Anyway, I just think that it really just comes down to one thing. Who's got that first pick in either place Deion will sign off on?
Which is new to me.
There
might have been people in the last few weeks that thought that. I didn't until yesterday. Even when I heard Shador with his teammate in that podcast, they talked about Malik Nabers. I was even skeptical then because I thought it would be Deion that would be working behind the scenes and saying, nah, you're not going to go to the Giants. But after hearing Deion yesterday, I mean, I am fully on board with the fact that this is a marriage that could happen if the Giants get the first overall pick.
Right, and when he was in town for Travis Hunter's support for the Heisman and everything else, you know, they're throwing out there in the street he and Malik Nabers. So I'm wondering if they have the same agent or something. There could be some of that going on right now. I have no idea. But look, he wants to be the number one overall pick. That's really what it comes down to.
And I think that he will be. I mean, the only way that he wouldn't is if there's some sort of injury that happens or Cam
Ward. Somehow the Patriots get to the number one pick.
Right, exactly.
And they can't work out a trade where they can make sure that they get Travis Hunter if that's who they want.
Yes, right. So and in that situation, I'm sure, I mean, it would be disappointing, but it would be understandable why he wouldn't be the number one overall pick. Yeah, so those are two things I would accept in this offseason and get excited about both those franchises. I'd be excited about Cam Ward as well, but much more excited about Shador Sanders. So if you give me in this offseason with these two franchises that have had a real tough time, you give me Shador Sanders and you give me Mike Vrabel to the Jets, I'll take that. Because Vrabel, although he's not Gruden, to me is the next best thing. Because he has got that personality. He's got that when he walks into the building, you know who the boss is. He's got experience as a head coach, a successful head coach in the NFL. He comes from big pedigree. I mean, he's a Western Pennsylvania guy. He's not taking any crap. Like, he is the personality that we want for the Jets. Now, originally, and I still am not totally sure, originally I didn't think that he would look at the Jet job as something that was palatable for him, and he still may not if he's got other opportunities and multiple opportunities. He may not pick the Jets. But if I'm Woody Johnson and there's any inkling of interest for Mike Vrabel, I'm making sure that I give him the biggest contract out of anybody, because he is one of the few guys that is available that I think could work here.
Yeah, I mean, it makes 100% sense. It's like the John Gruden thing.
Yeah, right. Not quite as good.
But I mean, like,
not quite as good.
As much as I want Aaron Glenn to get a job, he deserves it. He's worked his way up, and he's the defense coordinator, one of the better teams in the league, although a number of his defensive players are gone for the year, and he's going to have to manufacture something here. If they start giving up, you know, points like they gave up against the Bills last week, you know, it's not going to be a great reflection on him. But I think, you know what it's about, honestly, and it's about connecting with these players, and which personality can actually connect with these players. And I think Aaron's personality, while he's not gregarious, he's not a big personality, I think for the most part, everywhere he's been, he has connected with the players that he has coached, which is really a very important aspect. I mean, you know, he was a really good defensive back when he played in the NFL. He was a first-round draft pick of the Jets. I mean, I could see that, you know, that kind of thing being a little bit more palatable for Jet fans because he's one of them. That could be an interesting hire here, although I wouldn't want that for him. I'd want him to go somewhere else.
Yeah,
I think Mike Vrabel would be, or John Gruden, are the personalities to bring in here. Now, the question is, are they going to do the GM first? Because if they're doing the GM first, then all of a sudden that throws a whole different set of circumstances into the mix and variables.
Yeah, absolutely. And those GMs generally, just like we talk about general managers in baseball, don't want to bring in a guy who they feel like is going to have more power than them. They have to bring in someone. There's got to be a previous relationship. That's why that John Robinson was interviewed, and you got excited about that because they had worked together. You can't put two guys together who don't know each other at all.
Well, just remember, Dimitroff knows, I'm sure, Vrabel from his days at New England. I don't know if they overlapped there or anything, but they all were under that kind of umbrella.
But you also can't hire, all right, just let's just say they hired you as the general manager. You would walk in and you would want someone like Mike Vrabel because of I know what type of coach you'd want.
Yeah.
But there are general managers out there that might not know Mike Vrabel that'll go, you know, this guy, you know, we're talking about someone who's going to come in and he's got too much personality. You know, let's bring in that young, he's a defensive coach. Let's bring in a guy like Kevin O'Connell. That's work. Let's bring in a guy like Zach Taylor. That's work there. Let's try to find that next guy who's an offensive mind. And then, you know, and me and you, Woody, we'll run this organization. We'll let that guy just do what he needs to do from an X's and O's standpoint. Like, that's what I'd be afraid of when you hire the general manager first, because it happens all over the place.
I know that, but I also know that, you know, Zach Taylor and Kevin O'Connell landed in the right cities.
They did.
You know, and they also were very fortunate, you know, especially in Cincinnati, that they were able to draft Joe Burrow. And I don't think Zach Taylor's going anywhere. And I think Joe Burrow likes him. And I think that the offensive numbers anyway bear out, you know, huge success. They, you know, so why would you mess with that coach? But again, Zach Taylor wouldn't be the right coach for the Jets. You know what I mean?
No,
it just doesn't fit. I don't know if Kevin O'Connell, even though he was a Jet, I think he was a Jet at one time.
He was, yeah.
He would be the right coach for the Jets. And given all the enormity of this job, or the Giant job for that matter, you know, and all that comes along with it is got to be somebody who's got, you know, a name, a personality.
Got to be able
backbone.
To take a punch.
Yes.
You got to look at him and say, that guy can take a punch. That guy doesn't have a glass jaw. Like, because you're going to get punched in the face many times all over the place by the owner, by the media, by the players, by Rich Cimini, by everybody. You're getting punched in the face.
Report today in the Post, BT, that indicates that the Giants might be doing one of the things they just cannot do. I mean, we've talked about this all season long. If they are going to make a change in their hierarchy, it should be both out. You can't have one stay and the other go. And, as a matter of fact, if you're going to keep them, then make the decision to keep them and keep them beyond just next year. So Mara's got to figure out what he wants to do. But the one thing he cannot do, and Paul Schwartz alluded to this in his column, is that there is a possibility that Joe Shane can stay and Brian Daboll can go. I mean, if they do that, I give up. How many times you got to do the same thing and not understand that that's a mistake? Either fire them both and start fresh with the top pick, or keep them both. You cannot halfway it.
Yeah, listen, Mara can't do what's easy. He's got to do what's right here. And by every measurable, Joe Shane has failed colossally. Now, I understand what you wouldn't do is bring back Daboll and get rid of the GM because that makes no sense for the new hire.
Right.
But what they should not do is what you just said. I don't understand the justification. I thought about this and I looked for avenues where I'm like, yeah, you know, he really deserves a shot. I don't know what Joe Shane's done to distinguish himself at this job. I really don't. Now, we don't see him on game day. We see the head coach and we see the product. Now, the product has been put together by Joe Shane, and the product stinks. That's number one. Number two, when we did see Joe Shane, he didn't exactly come across as incredibly in charge and competent on Hard Knocks. So I don't know what you know. I believe the reporting for sure. Schwartz been around the team for a long time, and he's reputable. I don't understand how this could be a discussion. Shane back and not Daboll? Right. There's no way.
How many times have you and I talked about and said, who do you trust is better at their job moving forward? Or who do you think has done more even so far? And the answer for both of us, this is back when I wanted Daboll and Shane to stay.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm not sure.
Yep, yep, yep.
But the answer was always...
It was always the head coach.
Yeah, Dable's at least done more. Like, I believe more firmly in Daboll. Now... Again, this is going back weeks ago, so ask me now. I don't know how anybody, and look, I'm with you, Mr. Mara. Like, I don't want you to make any changes. I wanted to have some stability for a change. I thought the best thing was to stay the course with Shane and Daboll. However, you have to be open to different thought process after you're watching a team that's 2-12. Like, at 2-5 or whatever it was, it's a different story. 2-12, they stink. Do you think Dable's been a good offensive mind? The answer is no. What is there to hang your hat on? And then you're going to tell me that, okay, well, somebody's got to be a scapegoat, which everybody should be a scapegoat when you have a season this bad. Their worst season in the franchise 100-year history. Haven't won a game at home, division, they're an embarrassment. Okay, fine. You can scapegoat Daboll, but keep Joe Shane. Why? What has he done? He's been terrible, too. Why? Because this draft looked good this year? Joe Shane has been an embarrassment with those top picks. Come on. You got a clean house here.
I get it. I've been saying it for a while that they don't deserve to be back. They don't. Now, two things you can't do as an owner. You can't placate fans. You can't try to placate fans.
Right.
I'm not saying you don't, you know, throw them a bone occasionally just to make sure that they don't, you know, make a U-turn on the season ticket sales. But you can't operate just by placating fans, and you can't operate by doing what's easy. I admit this is hard. I admit this is counter to what he wants to do.
What do you think's the easy thing to do?
The easy thing would be the easy/lazy thing would be to bring them both back. That's the easy. It's also the wrong thing.
I don't know if that's the easy thing. I think the easy thing might just be to clean house again. But in this particular case, I happen to think that that's the right thing. The one thing you can't, like, the hard thing to do would be to say, in the face of everybody, the media and fans saying, clean house, saying, I'm sticking with these guys. So there might be a reward that's paid at the end of that, but that means you have to stick with them. You cannot, under any circumstance, halfway it. How could you just, that's the worst thing. Either keep them or fire them both. You can't say I'm keeping Shane, but yeah. Firing
no,
Daboll.
There's no way I would do that. By the way, just to clarify, like when I say do what's easy,
right.
I mean from Mara's perspective. The easy thing for Mara, sure, he's going to hear it, or if he even cares about what's said on the radio or on social media, and I'm sure his postseason press conference would be a bit uncomfortable, but easy for him in terms of not having to interview four, five, six people. That's what
more
I mean.
More comfortable now, just saying.
Yeah, that's, he could just go to his palace or just detach himself from the situation and really not have to worry about anything, even though there's, I would think 90%+ of the Giants fan base is incredibly, I was going to say disgruntled, but I honestly believe, and I've used the word a few times pertaining to the Jets, I believe it's more apathetic. I think that the Giants fan, that, and I blame them, this is not a knock, this is the reality of where they are. They've lost their bite, they've lost their edge. That's not their fault. It's ownership's fault. It's the team's fault. It's the franchise's fault. Giant fans are amazing, but Giant fans are no longer locked in the way that they used to be because there's nothing to lock into. So I think, again, when I look at, if I'm John Mara, I just take one, and it's going to suck because it's a lot of work and it's another cycle of upheaval, more volatility, which he's trying to get away from. I understand that. He doesn't want to be the Jets. That's what always distinguished the Giants from the Jets. More stability, more consistency, fewer firings. Just that's more like the Steelers, okay? But the right thing to do here is to, well, due respect, Shane, Daboll, both gone, move on.
Yeah,
Sorry. Yeah. Mm. And to me, that wouldn't have been the way that I would have gone. But, like, circumstances changed. This has gone so far off the rails. When he said, I don't anticipate making any changes. You and I had the conversation to start the show, and you're like, yeah, but he said I don't anticipate. That means a lot can change. And I was like, no, he's going to keep these guys. But also in my mind, I'm thinking, well, they're going to right the ship a little bit. They're not going to be a playoff team, but they're also not going to be the worst team in football. They have been, since then, the worst team in football. How can, like, I'd love to make a case. I want Shane and Dable back, okay? Let's just play that part. How can I make the case to keep them back? How? Who can do that? I don't care if it's Tiki. I don't care if it's hot. Give me the big Carl Banks. Give me the case. Like, I want the biggest Giant fan in the world and make a case to tell me why, based on merit over 3 years, you would keep Joe Shane and Brian Dable. You can't, because I wanted to make that argument. They made it impossible for me going back to after the Seahawks game where they played well in that game, even losing to the Bengals. You know, the Eagles was a different story. Losing to the Steelers competitive, again losing to Washington, losing to the Panthers. Like, remember, on and on and on. It just kept getting worse, losing to the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, the game against the Saints. Like, it hasn't stopped. They can't score. They can't move the ball. Their defense has been highly overrated coming into the year. They haven't done anything. There's not one thing you can hang your hat on and say, Sal, this is what I believe in here. There's nothing. You can't do it. It's impossible.
If you look at the roster, if you look at the roster, Sal, that's where the work of the GM obviously comes up. It's the worst roster in football. If you look at the offense, and I think, by the way, we're not the only ones saying that. I think if you were really to talk to respected NFL people, personnel people around the league, you know, 1 through 50, whatever, the Giants roster is the worst. And then when you look at, you know, Dable, and you look at the, you know, what he was supposed to be, this offensive, you know, innovative mind, and obviously Josh Allen, make it seem like Brian Dable made Josh Allen out to be Josh Allen. Stop with that nonsense. Now we all know it's true. But if his calling card's offense, I think the Giants' offense was better when they wore leather helmets and didn't have face masks.
Right.
It was probably better. This Giants' offense is unwatchable. It is atrocious. It is toothless. It is benign. It is boring. It is without anything remotely up to the standards of competent, not even good, competent NFL offenses. That's the coach, and the roster stinks. That's the GM.
Yeah, and I think Dable, like, I still do believe Dable has some quality traits.
Can I ask you, what are they at this point? I'm not saying there's none, but what are they?
Well, what I was going to say is I think he would play well more so in the 80s and 90s. I like the fact that he tries to play a game close to the vest, meaning control the ball. Again, they've been limited offensively, but shorten the game up.
Yeah.
Take advantage of others' teams' mistakes. He's not overly aggressive.
But does he want to do that, or does he have to do it based on the roster? Well, I don't even know.
I don't know, BT, but it's 3 years in. It's been the same thing.
Yep.
And it's actually gotten worse. So I'm not sure. We were supposed to see the offense opened up in year two. We didn't. And you could say injury, sure, but like, it can be an excuse for a few weeks or a season max.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be, well, 2 years in a while, Thomas is banged up again. There are injuries all over the place in the NFL. They also, this regime also chose Daniel Jones. Like, you want to say Mara forced them on a fine. They also chose to bring him back. They also did have success with him in year one. So why then regression from year two and year three from where we were in year one? But my point is, I think Dable is a fiery, passionate, hard-nosed guy who's going to hold his players accountable. I like the way he runs a game,
mm-hmm.
meaning a true head coach. I don't look at him and just say he's a defensive
guy or an offensive
guy.
I know what you're saying. I got you.
And in the game, I'm also antiquated in some of my thoughts, run the football, shorten the game, let the other team make mistakes. But when you watch today's NFL, as much as I maybe don't want to be open to that or evolve to it, you kind of have to, it's about the offense. It's about innovative offense. So if you're hiring an offensive mind, it better be an innovative. Look at what's going on in Minnesota with O'Connell. Look at what Ben Johnson has done in Detroit. And those are just two examples, but there are plenty of others. McVay, Shanahan.
Now, the Bills' offense is better without. Without Dable, by the way, right. If you think about it.
I'm not going to take away credit nor give him credit. Like, clearly, he was a part of developing Josh Allen, but nobody can turn Daniel Jones into Josh Allen. Like, there's no such thing as a quarterback whisperer. I've been saying that forever. Just not a real thing. But does Dable show you an innovative offense at all? You just answered that. Like, when you watch, they're not. So he's an offensive head coach without an innovative offensive plan.
Well, you got to take it a step further. He's an offensive coach with the worst offense in the history of the Giants.
Exactly.
I mean, right. So, come on, man. This isn't like, well, it's an average offense and he's not quite what we thought he'd be. This offense is the worst ever.
So now they hear this and they know this, at the Giants I'm talking about, and they're going to say, okay, well, all the reasons you guys just said, that's why we're going to move on from Brian Daboll.
Okay.
But I would counter and say, well, what has Joe Shane done to help him out? Like, you want to move on from Daboll? That's fine. I will acknowledge that. I admit that. You have to win a year like this. Like, they left you no choice. Not year one or year two. This is year three and they're having their worst year yet.
Two wins.
And it's been an embarrassment every step of the way.
Yep.
So what has Joe Shane done? Kayvon Thibodeau, total bust. Evan Neal. Like, you can't have a worse bust than Evan Neal, sticking with Daniel Jones, letting Barkley go, even though we thought it was the right move at the time. It proved to be the wrong move. Like, yes, theoretically, it's the right move, but they look bad in the end of this. McKinney, the same thing. Like,
trading for Burns when you're nowhere near being ready to win.
Bingo.
Even though I like Burns the player, it didn't make any sense based on their timeline. None.
Right, so where is Mara potentially getting the
idea that Shane... I don't know. Unless he just doesn't want to deal with both. Like,
even neighbors, I said it at the time, I think it's a bad pick.
You did.
Look where they're at now.
Not him as a player, but based on what they need.
And by the way, him as a player... Maybe not a player, but obviously his attitude has not been great this year. But anyway.
Stuff they're bringing to the table, which, by the way, was addressed in the pre-draft stuff. Yeah. How would you deal with not getting the football? So there was always the antennas up early that maybe it wouldn't be, you know, the most cohesive relationship, even though I do like neighbors. Listen, we'll get to these calls. The bottom line is this. This is an unwatchable, unmitigated mess. And when it gets to that level, and it's not year one, and it's not year two, and it's year three, there is really nothing to decipher. God, I hate to be so blunt, but, man, it's not like they're going to be destitute on the street. They've got more money than we do, and it's not all about money, but they'll be fine. So I do, but I say that
because
that's important to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids will be taken out of schools. I don't take this stuff lightly, really. But there is no reason, zero, to bring back, forget about one, to bring back both. They should both be gone.
Correct. Even worse, though, the worst thing they could do, BT, would be to split them up. Oof. That, to me, would be a disaster. All right, 888-808-1019 is the number to call. BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beat Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Neil is calling from Weehawken. What's up, Neil?
Hey, guys. So, morning. Look. I know Shane, we're talking about his third draft class. Am I the only one who sees it as he spent a second round pick, which should be a guy who gets a second contract, is there for 6-7 years. Even if Newbin turns into Xavier McKinney, he's already shown he's going to let him walk. The other good pick, the running back, he's already shown he's going to let him walk. Neighbors is going to walk if we don't fix the quarterback situation, right? So that's one of the reasons I just don't like Shane. Now, the flip side of that, though, is Daboll. He does it. I don't hate him. A very, really strong word. I don't dislike him the way it seems a lot of my other fellow fans do. And that's because I see guys running open where the quarterback doesn't pull the trigger. Now, Drew Locke's big selling point was he's got the Jameis Winston trait in him. He's going to throw it deep and he's going to get some touchdowns. And he's also going to give it to the other team every now and then.
Yeah.
He's not even doing that. Yeah. So.
I haven't seen that at all. No. I tell for Jameis Winston offense here. Well, picks at
I
all.
For it.
I mean, they can't, Neil, and thank you for the call. The one issue I have with Neil's call is that I would not look at this year's draft for Shane and say, well, he's not going to keep those guys long term, therefore he's a problem. I would look at overall the way that he's built the roster and the decisions that he's made and say it's almost every one has been the wrong decision. I'm not talking about every pick. I'm talking about the decision. Here's all you need to know. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll built a team this year that they expected to compete. Forget about what we expected. They expected their team this year to compete. What does that mean, compete? All right, let's say the very least 7-8, all right, high-end 9-10 wins. That's compete. They thought that's how they were building their team. First year, aberration in a good way. Second year, aberration, bad way. Third year now, you're starting to make more of your mark as a general manager 3 years in and a head coach. You're here 3 years. Have some pieces in place. They brought neighbors in to help Jones with the offense. Jones is hit back and healthy. Offensive line should be better. Defensive players, they trade for Burns. You got Thibodeau. You got Sexy Dex in the middle. Like, they thought they were going to build a competitive football team. And yet, we're watching the worst team in the history, 100-year history of the New York Giants that can't do anything right. Special teams a disaster, the defense a disaster, the offense a disaster. I don't know how you could justify keeping one of two, if not keeping both. You can't keep any of them.
Well, I think the key point is that pretty much everything is broken. It's not as if we're sitting here, whether it's the Yanks or the Mets, and we're dissecting like, all right, the bullpen's leaky, but they score a ton of runs, or their starting pitching is good and they have a pretty good offense, but the bullpen's been a little whatever. It is everything. I mean, they're a disaster on special teams. They're invisible on offense, and they offer no resistance on football. And by the way, on defense, don't fool yourself. These scores, the Ravens could have won 50-7. The score was 35-7 with 6 minutes to go, and they got that meaningless touchdown. And they've had other cosmetic touchdowns this year because the other team has taken their foot off the gas, whether it's sitting down their starting quarterback or, you know, just going into a vanilla-based defense. Like, that's not going to twist it. It could, as bad as it is, it could be worse. It could be worse.
Right. And think about what you're saying. Right,
it's absolutely, I can't even watch the Giants. At least like you watch Rodgers, like, you know, like, I'm not saying the Jets are fun. I'm not saying the Jets are fun either. But if you take any non-biased football observer, which team is more interesting? They both stink. But at least like the Jets feel like there's a little flair, a little something. Giants are the most boring team I've ever seen.
Right. They're not only bad, they're boring as well, which is the worst thing you could be. Anthony's calling from Jersey City. What's up, Ant?
Hey, what's up, guys? Real fast, you know how it goes way past the even the coaching and the GM? The Giants are so unserious that after Sunday's loss, somebody from the Giants PR, the Giants themselves, reach out to a Giants podcast, Talking Giants, to ask them to take down a video that they went through every move of what Joe Shane has done since he got here. They asked them to take the video down, and if not, they will no longer help them out.
Is that
so
true?
I got to investigate that.
Yeah, I will
have to look into that.
I love that podcast. I love Talking Giants, those guys, Bobby Skinner specifically. I've talked to him before. I've had him on the WFAN Daily podcast. I'm going to hit him up to find out if that's accurate. I don't know that that's the case. I'm not going to run with that. Also, that's not, like, that's side issue problems. Let's focus on real problems. And just to reiterate, to your point, BT, I don't like coming on the air saying these guys should lose their
job. I hate saying it.
A matter of fact, just to reiterate again, I wanted to keep them early in the year through the storm after week one, where everybody was saying, oh, the pitchforks are going to be out and these guys, the wheels are going to come off. And I'm like, come on, what are you kidding me? Whether it's Connor Hughes or Pat Leonard, guys who I like and I'm friendly with, coming after Dable hard after week one. I'm like, no, I believe in these guys. I think they'll be competitive. Right, week two, I'm making a case for them. Week six, week seven, like, I just can't do it anymore. Their record speaks for itself. Do I really think it's proper to evaluate a general manager in just 3 years? No, but when you have a 2-12 season and you have a top pick and the decision is, for me, either extend them beyond next year or get rid of them both, I think you have to get rid of them both. Like, they're just in a spot now where, unfortunately, to me, they've left no choice.
You see, the head coach can't hide. Like, if the season ends and they're 2-15 or 3-14 and Brian Dable's on the sidelines week one next year, and they're down, you know, 14-3. Like, you have whatever, 17-3, 20-7, and it's just ugly right away. You've got a problem on your hand that you'd have to address within the first month of the season. That's how loud and how detectable the venom would be. So the head coach can't hide, which is why I believe that Mara is more inclined to get rid of Dable than Shane. All right.
I believe that too, by the way.
Okay. Now let's get to the general manager. Yes, he's a little bit more in the weeds outside of the Hard Knocks, though they won't do that this year. But now I get to the objective analysis of the general manager and the job that he's actually done. Forget about being, you know, front and center for the coaches or for the fans to attack whatever or voice their displeasure. The resume, the bullet points favorably on Joe Shane's resume, they're barely there. So it's like you almost can't bring the head coach back because it's almost unfair to start another season that way because the fans are disgusted and the general manager shouldn't be back because he hasn't been very good at his job.
The defense rests, like, there's nothing else to say there. And the fact that they would consider half-weighing it just shows you that this is what they keep doing. They've done this for years. That's the problem, Mr. Mara. That don't halfway it. Make a decision like a big boy, a tough decision. Either you want to keep them, good. We'll disagree with it, but keep them or fire them. Do not halfway it.
If you missed it yesterday while watching the Giant game, I think Tiki Barber was as dirty as he's ever been. So we will play that for you coming up in exactly 10 minutes at 2:45. I mean, I even feel bad playing it on the radio, to be honest. It was that over-the-top dirty, but hey, if it's okay with CBS, it's okay with us.
My favorite part of the game.
Was it? Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah. What else is your favorite part of the game?
Just that.
Yeah. I mean, that was a disaster. And after the game, like, I'm listening to Brian Daboll's post-game press conference, and I don't want to say I feel bad for him, but I sort of did, because sometimes there are no answers. It's like this morning when my wife asked me, did you eat upstairs? I've told you many times you're not allowed to eat upstairs, and I ran out of things to say. I was just like, you got me. I'm a schmuck. Like, I really had nothing else to utter. And I think in Daboll's case, he's doing the press conference. They stink. What do you want him to say? We're terrible. And then it got worse. Because after Brian Daboll gave you the customary, we got a battle, we're trying, all that stuff, he was then asked about the plane over and over again, and it felt very awkward. Ladies and gentlemen, because we love awkwardness, here's Brian Daboll being asked about the plane numerous times.
What do you think when they, there was a plane flying above the stadium again today, and this one said, please fire everybody.
Yeah, just control, we can control.
Paraphrasing.
That doesn't impact you at all. That's a sentiment from at least a section of the fan base that wants.
Yeah. Just control what we can control. Get ready to play a game this week.
Do you think it's a distraction?
No, I didn't know about it until you told me right now. So control what we can control. Get ready to go ahead and have a good week. And whoever's available, get them ready to play.
I'm going to try this tonight. If my wife asks me again, did you eat upstairs? And I've told you you're not allowed to, my answer is going to be, control what you can control.
This is important context for the audience, though, Evan. What is upstairs, an art museum? I know, what's going on?
So, is it the nice furniture?
It's the fact that I make a lot of crumbs, so then bugs show up, so my wife's basically said, eat downstairs. I eat anywhere else, but don't eat upstairs.
So you're a pig. That's what it comes down
basically,
to.
Basically, I'm a pig, but I'm going to try the Daboll tonight. Control what you can control. And of course, before we get to your calls, do you believe Brian Daboll when he said, I didn't know about the plane until you guys just asked me?
Yeah, because I don't think that the Giants knew about it until right before the game. So why would you go tell the coach that?
The only reason and you would know better than me, the only reason I would suggest that maybe he'd be told is because you know some jackass at the press conference is going to ask the coach about it. So if you're the Giants in PR, don't you say, hey, just want to give you a heads up, they're calling for your job again via plane. Just be prepared when Jordan Rondon pounds you with that question.
I just don't know when you would tell him that. So you're not telling him before the game. Right? Because I remember getting the text message about this.
Was it from us?
Right.
it's probably us.
No, it was from a Giant employee.
Oh, okay.
Jeff, I saw inside. So it is what it is. But I don't think that he went and told Dabes. Right? Because why would you go tell Dabes that 45 minutes, 35 minutes before kickoff?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. And then right after the game, he comes in right after the game.
Right.
Talks to the team, and then he talks to the media. Like I guess you could mention it to him, but he probably didn't care.
Yeah, I think as a human...
Just in as heads up, this plane, okay, whatever. We just got our ass kicked by the Ravens. Right. Why do I care about that?
I think you care about it only because who the hell wants a plane, like basically saying you stink, everyone should be fired?
Yeah, but...
I wouldn't want a plane overhead at WFAN.
But aren't people saying that anyways?
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. You're going to hear it on Sports Talk Radio anyway.
So what's the point of the plane? Well, to me, the plane doesn't move me in any way.
The issue I had with this plane is I didn't like the message very much. Like, the message was, for those that didn't hear it, Mr. Mara enough. By the way, good job with the Mr. again. We're showing a lot of class with this. Mr. Mara enough. We won't stop until you fire everyone. I don't like that message.
Right.
You're not going to stop?
What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to just waste more money with something in the air?
Right. Go fly another plane? You're 2-15.
Yeah.
Like, it just makes no sense. It's become stupid to me.
Mm.
Not impactful or meaningful. It's become a gimmick. And so when something becomes a gimmick, it's not meaningful anymore.
Well, because it's happened numerous times. Like, it was legendary in the 70s, right? Too much bad football, whatever the phrasing was. And then there was a change, right? And everything changed. The Giants became what they were. It took a while, but it happened. The Jets had a plane with John Idzik, and John Idzik got fired. But now we've had two planes in 2.5 weeks.
Right.
So it's basically all the time.
Hear me out. The Giants and the Maras see this, they spite keep the regime now.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah. Fans are flying places. Screw you guys. I'm not giving into you. The reporters keep on them fired. I'm not giving into
there
them.
There are. It's interesting but you
it's
say just, that.
It's interesting also that it's a meaningful question to ask the head coach.
Well, what are you going to say? What? Why did Greg Stroman get baked by Rashawn Bateman?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What happened with Dane Belton? You know, why was he in the middle of the field? Right. He's cover two safety. Why is someone behind him?
Oh, no one's asking that anymore.
I mean, if they knew football, you would.
Yeah, fair.
It's cover two. Why you are the deep safety on that half. How the hell is Rashawn Bateman behind you?
Yeah.
Like that's the question you should ask.
I think at 3 or what are we now? 2-11, 2-12. We're 2-12.
Yeah.
I think at 2-12, everybody just quits with the football questions. It's just like, so you're going to get fired? So where are you going to work next year?
Right.
But you're right about one thing. Every owner, and just look at the owners in our town, how different they act towards things. James Dolan would see a plane and a protest and basically tell everybody to drop dead. Like, I'm not listening to you.
Right.
If anything, I'm going to give that guy an extension. But then there are owners like Woody Johnson, who's the complete opposite, who will listen to what is said. And the truth is, I think a good owner hears what's out there, but makes the decisions that are best for their franchise, mm-hmm. not based on public pressure.
I agree.
Let's get to your calls, 888-808-1019, and Tiki Barber will get very dirty coming up in the next 5 minutes. Let's go to DJ in East Brunswick. How are you, DJ?
Hey, what's going on, guys? First time caller, long time listener.
Appreciate
you. I'm a Cowboys fan, so just let me get to this real quick. Tiki, you were a baller. You were great.
Thank you, man.
It kills me for Loogie that he has to go through this, but it also joys my heart that Sean has to go through this. But
I hear what you're saying.
This is out of control.
I hear what you're saying, DJ.
It's a dumpster fire. Something's got to change because this nothing is getting better. It's just getting progressively worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, well,
that's all I had to say, guys. Right, appreciate you guys.
DJ. Well, I mean, the talent's just getting worse. It's just the defense is just, it's guys who were college free agents. You know what I mean? Elijah Chapman, he wasn't even drafted.
Right.
Casey Rogers wasn't drafted.
The problem is it's year 3. That's the biggest issue with this whole thing. I did a little research project last night because that's how I roll, where I looked at every team that had a season where they won 3 or fewer games over the last decade and looked closer at, hey, did that coach survive? And what I've come up with is every single team that had 3 wins or fewer either fired their head coach, or that coach was in their first year. Zach Taylor and Dan Campbell are two prominent examples where in their first years, they both had awful seasons. The last time a head coach won 3 or fewer games, not in their first year, and survived, I have an answer. And it's going to depress everybody. I'm going to warn you. That answer is Hugh Jackson,
who went
0-16 in his second season and kept his job. So the point is, if Brian Daboll survives, at least in recent times in the NFL, for someone to have this bad of a year in their second or third or fourth year and survive it does not happen.
Well, yeah. Evan, when you're getting crumbs all over the upstairs carpet tonight, can you do a little more research for me?
Go
Let
ahead.
Me know how many of those coaches won Coach of the Year 24 months earlier.
Okay. That's your answer? Sure.
No, because that's part of it.
I get what Brian accomplished.
When everybody goes 3 failed years, it's not 3 failed years.
No, it's gotten worse each year. It's not 3 failed years. It's a very good year, and then a step back and another step back. I don't think anyone's saying it's 3 failed seasons.
Some are.
Well, they're wrong.
Exactly. The problem is it's too complicated to just simplify. Like, it was easy to see that Joe Judge was not a good coach. It was easy to see that Pat Shurmur was not a good coach. Even though he did some good things for Daniel Jones. It was easy to see that Ben McAdoo wasn't a good coach because they got fired after 2 years. And then a special kind of bad, as you always say,
yes,
Evan. It's not obvious that Dave's is a quote-unquote bad coach. He's just, they're not having success. And the circumstances last year were because the line was garbage after Andrew Thomas got hurt. And then your starting quarterback, who just signed a big contract, is out after 6 weeks or 7 weeks or whatever it was. And then this year, you know you're in purgatory, basically, with your quarterback. You know you want to get rid of him, but you don't, and you hold on to it. It was mismanaged, right? Not miscoached. It was mismanaged. Is the best way I would describe it.
Yeah, and I think if it was fair or right, I think most Giant fans would say, man, is there a way to fire Joe Shane and keep Brian Daboll? But that's just so backward and impossible to force a coach on a new GM. But in hindsight, like, That, I think, would please the most people. We know the guy can coach. We want him to coach a rookie quarterback. It's the guy picking players that hasn't done a good enough job.
Let's go to Jim in Madison. How are you, Jim?
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
No problem.
You know, Sean just kind of teed me up for this. We know Dable is a great coach. What I'm looking for are specific examples of things Shane or Dable have done that would justify bringing them back. In other words, the results have not been there, clearly, but they have done X, Y, or Z, and that's why you bring them back despite the non-results. Because I don't necessarily agree with you guys. I think a new GM might not draft one of these two guys. They might bring in a bridge and build, which is what I want. But if it's Shane and Dable, they're clearly going to draft a new one of these two guys to save their own hide. And if that doesn't work, and you keep the wrong coach and the wrong GM, and they bring in the wrong QB, man, oh, man, are we setting ourselves back to 2030.
Jim, you're making a good point. But so here's the thing. If you're not going to draft a quarterback, then fire everybody. If you're going to build depth around the, whatever, offensive line, because I don't think you need it on the defensive line. You got some good players on that side. You got two corner. You got some corner. You got some defensive players that are really good for you. So if you're going to build offensive linemen, I'm trying to think what else you would do. You don't need a running back. You don't need wide receivers.
You could take the corner, Travis Hunter.
Yeah, Travis Hunter. Right.
You don't have a number one corner.
So if you're not going to go draft a quarterback, and so you need a coach who's proven to be able to work well with young quarterbacks, then you fire everybody.
Mark, why did I feel like that's the first four episodes? It makes you feel horrible about yourself.
Right. I gotcha. By the way, Sean is very concerned about Michael Penix Jr. now starting for the Atlanta Falcons.
Why are you scared? Don't be scared.
Well, let me ask you something, Tiki. Why do you think I'm scared?
I don't know.
Well, why do you think I'm scared? Why
because,
do you
care? Because the Falcons built a team to win now, and it was all about, I don't know, Kirk Cousins being the difference maker, and now Michael Penix is going to be the difference maker?
You're giving me too much credit. I have bleep for brains, Tiki, okay? And here's why I'm scared.
Yeah, why are you scared of Michael Penix Jr.?
I'm scared of Michael Penix Jr. because the recent track record tells you, no matter how good these rookie quarterbacks might end up being, season, long-term, whatever, they lose their debuts.
I got it.
So you're concerned the Giants are going to blow the tank?
Here's the fun stat for you, Tiki.
That makes sense.
3 years of first-round quarterbacks.
Now I see.
First-round quarterbacks the last 3 years. Combined, 1-7 in their debuts.
Who won?
Caleb Williams on opening day this year versus the Titans on defensive scores.
That's right. There was no offense in that game.
So your concern is that the Atlanta Falcons are likelier to lose now by starting, even though Kirk Cousins was dreadful for 4 weeks in a row.
I actually brought this thing to social media, Giant fan. Oh, have you seen us play? We stink. It's not about the Giants stinking, and it's not about not believing in Michael Penix, the quarterback for the future. And I understand how Kirk Cousins and the Falcons' offense has gone stagnant. But rookie quarterbacks in their first games, it's the first time you step onto an NFL field truly.
You think you know it.
You think you know, but you don't know.
So, okay, I am not a Falcon fan. I could ask Sal. I know Sal's still a Falcon fan. But my thought process, if I was a Falcon fan, and I'm in the position I'm in, I'm 7-7, I still have a shot. I'm coming off this incredibly ugly victory, but I won a game, stopped my four-game losing streak, and Kirk Cousins low cooked. My philosophy would be, ooh, the Giants at home, that's the perfect place to start.
I'm sure they are thinking
so that. I still think I'm going to win. I still think Michael Penix gives me the best chance to win because of how awful Kirk Cousins has been. But I bet you they're looking at the Giants as the softest starting point for him.
I'm sure there's two sides to the coin, and if I was running the Falcons, I would be looking at that. But if I was also running the Falcons, I'd be saying, you know what? We're 7-7. What's the ceiling on this team?
We have well, they can still win the division.
They can. And I'm sure right now Kirk Cousins hasn't been a difference maker, and maybe, you know what? If Penix gets hot and we make the playoffs, great. But if not, at least I get his feet wet now to be my starter next year.
Right.
I just don't know how you look at this move by Atlanta and go, oh, this makes the Falcons 100% better. The Giants are doomed. I look at the other way going, he might be better those last three games, but that first game, he's still facing Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau.
I think you're very, very wrong because Kirk Cousins has been the worst quarterback in the NFL for over a month.
Last 4 weeks.
Guys,
they're literally making the
one touchdown, nine interceptions? Is that what it is?
It's three, seven, nine.
Nine interceptions, one touchdown,
going all the way back to November 10th, and they're 1-4.
By the way, if this game, they're
literally starting the guy who thinks they give them the best chance to win.
And the one happened against the Raiders last week.
Correct.
Which they almost blew at the end.
They won 15-9.
Evan, I'm not disagreeing with you. If this game was in 2 weeks and Michael Penix got his first game jitters out of the way, I'd be with you going, this makes him a more dangerous team. It's something about the rookie quarterback playing that first game, and just that first moment is always a little overwhelming. And don't give me this nonsense. Yeah, Lamar Jackson threw 5 touchdown passes versus the Giants last week. They're the Baltimore Ravens roster, and he's an MVP, okay? 2 weeks ago, Derek Carr, did they run away and pound the Giants, or did they take a missed field goal at the end?
Yeah.
So don't tell me that, yo, this Giant defense is so bad they're going to get torched. They didn't 2 weeks ago versus Derek Carr, and that is without Dexter Lawrence coming. Don't tell me that Michael Penix is coming in here and we know for a fact he's torching the Giants. I am scared out of my mind. And you know what else is on the table? They win this game because of all the strength of schedule, BS, and everything else. You know, you're going to go from picking 1 or 2 to picking 8 or 9 real quick.
I mean, that is true.
And then you end up with Kirk freaking Cousins anyway next year.
At the booby prize. He is right mathematically. Like, if the Giants win this game against Atlanta or even the game against Indianapolis the following week, there's a really good chance they're going from picking 1, 2 to picking 8 or 9.
Yeah, that's just crazy.
That's crazy.
It is. But, I mean, what do you think about? Because if you're Dave's and you're coaching, as Connor told us yesterday, if you missed it, go find us on the podcast. Connor was fantastic with the Jets and the Giants yesterday. You're coaching for your job.
Yeah, Connor Hughes, that's what Brian Daboll said, according to Connor Hughes, to an unnamed other coach. I feel like I'm coaching for my job. Well, I think you're right. I think if you're Brian Daboll, you're trying to win.
You have to.
I think it's different, though, for us as fans. Like, I get the fear that a win can screw everything up.
But I think if you're Dave right now, you're saying, I got to do all I can to win this game, the next game, and going to Philadelphia, hope they're not playing for anything, and try to win that game.
I agree.
I finish 5-12 mm-hmm. and not have the worst record in Giants history.
I agree. Yep. I think there's
you
no
have,
doubt.
You have to do that.
He's 100% thinking that.
So if I save my job, I'll worry about the quarterback situation
right.
when I have to worry about the quarterback situation.
Tiki, you're right. And this is where I'm going to go a step further. I hope you're happy. You idiots that bought those planes and thought you were doing some kind of grand gesture. To
turn it on them now? What'd they do?
Hear me out. You morons who plucked down thousands, 2 of you, to fly planes, and then the second one got his 15 minutes of fame doing interviews and everything else. You're idiots, and if you wanted to accomplish what you... if you want to get rid of the GM and the coach, you know where I stand, but I can't argue it. But this is what you did. You heard Connor Hughes yesterday. Now he's telling coaches, there is extra fire that has been lit under Brian Daboll where he's not as comfortable now. And guess what? That coaching staff is not... So you may not think they're competent. They're not stupid. There's a rookie quarterback starting against them this week. This is the game. They're going to pull out all the stops. Could you see a fake punt in this game? Could you see more aggression on fourth down? There could be a moment in this game where Brian Daboll's coaching differently now and more aggressive because you morons flew planes, and now the Giants win the game versus a rookie quarterback and don't get their franchise quarterback just so you could feel good about yourself and flex your muscles.
Well, it kills
that. Plane flyers, you suck.
Well, it kills that narrative that you can't draft a quarterback then. Right?
Because
then you have to keep the regime. So now you're not in a position to draft a quarterback.
Then
so
you spin the wheels.
Then you go draft the best offensive lineman that's available or whatever other position you find in need of at this point. And then maybe take a flyer in second round and then find some quarterback in free agency. And then Dave keeps his job. Yep. And if he sucks again, then you fire him and you draft Arch Manning.
Because you know what?
There's the plan.
Thank you, Tiki. The prioritization of this fan base, this sometimes very stupid and foolish fan base that's hungry,
it's
so backwards.
It's individuals. Thinking they speak for the whole, and they don't.
Exactly. Here's the problem. Start focusing on what this team needs to fix itself, and that's a franchise quarterback. You're so focused on firing the GM and the coach that you might light a fire, and they win a game, and you screw yourself out of the bigger priority this offseason.
I don't know if you know this, but there's a GoFundMe from Giant fans to raise money to continue flying planes over MetLife Stadium.
I donated a few shekels to that.
Did you?
Holiday season, I was feeling.
Oh, Big Shot can't do it again.
Tommy finally opened up his wallet.
I know Tommy Lugauer way too well. He's literally lying to the audience. There is no way the cheapest man at this radio station donated money to a GoFundMe.
Al Duke still works here, so I don't know about the cheapest. I love you, Al.
Al spends more than you.
He has more than me.
I've never seen you. It's not about having. I've never seen you spend a dime on anything.
No, it's definitely about
you trying to tell the audience that you spent money on a GoFundMe to fly planes over MetLife Stadium?
I don't like the term lying, possibly trying to gas Sean up.
Okay, fair enough. He's admitting he's lying.
He did say a couple shekels.
Couple of shekels.
I threw a quarter into it.
The current exchange rate is 50 cents. So he's good.
A few euros
I believe that. I believe that.
Thank you, Tiki.
Would that really piss Sean off if you did donate a few dollars to this?
If I donated to it? Yeah, he'd be pissed off. Yeah, I mean, because it would back up his rationale here that John Mara cares about a plane and a banner.
You think that's why I'd be pissed off? No, I'd be pissed off that I just paid for your Uber last week when we were out driving.
No, that's not my fault that you were too, had a few and you overpaid. That's your problem, not mine. And I didn't ask you to do it. You just did it out of the kind of
start. I don't think that the planes are having anything to do with Brian Daboll's want to coach his team to a victory. That is the most flawed thought I think I've ever heard.
He wants to win the game.
Of course
he does. My point is, the heat has been turned up a little bit more, and it's not just because of losing. There's now so much outside noise.
Right. A couple weeks ago, what Sean is saying, he was, all right, I'm comfortable. Because John Mara said that he doesn't want to make change. So I'm probably okay.
Yeah, no, I think that. But I think that losing, look, one thing I've always said to you, and I can't back it up, it's just the feeling. I have a tough time imagining surviving 2-15. And I've said that to you for seven weeks now when they weren't where they are now.
Right.
And I think that that reality just sinks in when you lose week after week after week. And that's all I think it is.
Especially when you're non-competitive.
Right, which was the case against Baltimore.
And the case against the home games against Tampa Bay. I mean, it's been bad.
Yeah, it's been bad. But I love seeing a true diehard fan panicking over the possibility his teammate win on Sunday. Because that's literally what you just did.
Spoiler alert, Friday I'm taking the Giants.
I can imagine.
BT and Sal on the fan. Back to the calls. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. What happened, Dove? What am I doing here? I'm sorry.
Rick, I take a call.
I was going to take a call. Can we take a call? Okay, there you go. Bob is calling from Babylon. What's up, Bob?
Bobby.
Good afternoon, guys, and Merry Christmas. And this is a comment on your show. I think you're like an offensive line. You're getting better as you work longer together.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks,
and I wanted to pick
we
up
did,
on
we did have
comment.
A nice little blow up yesterday, but I think we're okay.
Yeah.
You guys are fine.
Over sports. Think about that.
No, I want to follow up
over
on
the Yankees plans. Right. Think about what we did. It's so stupid. Go ahead, Bobby.
Giant fan since 1960. That's a long time.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
And I want to pick up on your comment a few days ago, BT.
Okay.
If I was the general manager, my sweet spot would be to trade the number one pick to either 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd throw the chum in the water again and try and get somebody around 15 or 16 to trade back again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have a plethora, this big bushel of draft picks this year and next year. And then I go for the quarterback next year.
Who's making the selections? Wait, hold on a second. Who's making those selections? Is it Chain or somebody else?
It's me.
You might be better off. I'm sorry, and thank you for the call, Bob.
Get the resume out there, Bobby?
It can't be any worse than Shane the first couple of years. I like that in theory. BT, that's going to be hard to sell. Also, if it were a new regime.
You need to the fans?
Yes.
Can
you imagine the Giants having the number one pick and not taking a quarterback? Oh, my God. You think the planes would be flying over MetLife? They'd be flying into MetLife. You can't. I know what you're saying, and I don't philosophically disagree that there are times to do that. I would have done it last year. If you didn't love a quarterback, fine. I would never want to force the issue. I think because of the years of mistakes, and it's not one person's fault, it's multiple regimes' fault, but because of that, if they are in a spot where they have the top pick, maybe even top two, they almost have to take a quarterback, right or wrong.
But that's what I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, I know.
The temptation of just doing what most people like you are saying that they should do.
All right, if they kept Shane and Dable, would you still do that?
No, that's where I was going. I think it's almost harder to sell that to the fans. Like, you talk about the fans, and you've got to incorporate to an extent the fans who are, I mean, beyond disenfranchised. They're just, I mean, they're apathetic. And I don't blame you. I think that if it's a new regime, it's an easier sell. Hey, that first press conference. Hey, guys, listen, there's a reason why we're here, and I don't know if you quite say we're bereft of talent. I don't know if you quite that will say it. I don't know if they need to be that honest or transparent, but we all know it's true. And if you present it as the cupboards are bare, and there's a reason why this once proud franchise with four Super Bowl, four Lombardi trophies in the case here down the hall has been
really, really backwards for a while. And we believe, in our vision, and we believe the best thing to do is this trade. And I think now if it's other people communicating that, I think it'll be more accepted than if Shane communicates that. Then I think there would be a protest if it's Shane. I do.
Look, bottom line, regardless of what I think or you think or the public thinks on this, if Joe Shane himself said, listen, Mr. Mara, Joe Shane in this hypothetical, Mr. Mara, I understand why you want a quarterback and we need a quarterback. However, I don't love Shedeur Sanders. I don't love Cam Ward. I'm telling you that I would advise trading this pick and getting a bushel of picks.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how they feel and you're the owner and you're hiring these people that you trust, and again, if it's not Shane because we may not trust him, if it's the new guy, then I think you have to let them cook, right?
And what if it is Shane? What if Shane says that?
Well, I think Shane has less leg to stand on because of the way he's drafted in 3 years.
Yep.
But it also, it's a tough call. Like, we need to, the final nail in the Shane and Dable coffin is going to be on them drafting and developing a quarterback. If it's not next year, what are we getting to, year five before Shane and Dable draft a quarterback? And then the excuse next year, like, let's just say Mara comes out and says, Shane and Dable are our guys beyond this year.
And they trade out.
Yep. Then they win.
They're 5-12, 4-13.
Then what? So then the excuse is going to be, well, we couldn't trade up for number three or number two because the team wouldn't trade.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Darren, like, that's why it's very complicated and it's a very unenviable position. I don't know if I kind of vacillate. I do go a little bit back and forth, like, what's ultimately right for the Giants? I do believe Dable could be a good coach, so I don't really want to get rid of him. But, God, two wins thus far, you almost have to. I think Shane's been worse, even though they had a pretty good draft this year. The first two were not good, and the first two most important picks he made, one is atrocious and one is not nearly as good as a lot of people thought, in Evan Neal and Kayvon Thibodeau. So, I but then I'm also like, well, continuity, and you want to be fair, and you don't want to just repeat what you've done for the last 10 years. I go all over the map. I can't imagine what Mara's thinking.
I know.
It's actually his team.
I know. It's hard. And it's hard not to incorporate history, but you can't. But it is why you're in this position that you are in. But if you forget about that, start from scratch next year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that I would be trying to make this decision, whether you decided Shane and Dable or somebody else, and then what to do with that top pick. We'll come back.